and welcome to episode 10 of Tales from the Periphery with me, your host, Mike Whittaker. And as we quite often say these days, I have a guest. All the way from the darkened depths of Peterborough, my partner in Battletech Crime from Peterborough War Games Club, Bob Sawyer.
Hello.
Hello, welcome aboard.
Be here.
Right, you get the new bug treatment, because you've not been on before. We have a set of stock questions for new guests. This dates back to me doing the Meeples and Miniatures podcast back in the year dot, when Neil used to do it to all his new guests, but I've added a few twists. So, first and obviously important question is, how did you get into gaming in general and Battletech in particular?
Well,
I mean, always bad when they start well.
Well, gaming in general is, I believe, the standard path for a gentleman of my years, which is somebody who's nudging gently on the door of 40, which is I walked past the Games Workshop when I was about 7 years old and went, oh, I like dragons, I want a dragon, then went through the painful learning process, first of all, that Games Workshop can't write rules for Toffee, although they have beautiful miniatures. And then also went through the painful learning process that at a certain age, a gentleman has to choose between wargaming and girls. And then the second learning process, when you discover that actually some girls also like wargaming and life suddenly looks rosier for the rosier for it.
Yep, I married one of those.
Lucky. So yeah, that was wargaming. I've always liked the modelling aspect. I've always liked the spectacle of it on the table. How did I get into Alpha Strike? I played the MechWarrior games on PC from quite a young age. I've always really loved them. I've always liked the universe, but I first got into it pre-internet and without a club around me, so I never knew that there was all of this other stuff around it. And then, God, what would it have been? HBS Battletech would have been 2014?
Something like that.
Something around that kind of thing. And I suddenly realised, oh, God, there's way more than this, and now there's the internet, so I can fall down an absolute rabbit hole. And I started getting into the lore, and I started reading about the tabletop, and went, ooh, this looks more interesting. And then, well, unfortunately for me, Mike, a couple of years ago, I met this at the Peterborough War Games Club, who introduced me to a crippling new way to financially inconvenience myself, and the rest, as you know, was history.
Absolutely, yeah. Harebrained Schemes, it turns out, was 2018, so not as long ago as you think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I missed it completely. I got into the hobby and out of Battletech by then. I failed to notice its existence in its entirety. Right. On to the quickfire round, then. And we know the answer to the first one. Classic or Alpha Strike?
Alpha Strike. Although I have a weakness which is growing for Classic. Alpha Strike is just more fun for me.
Okay. Toys on the table. Painted or not?
Painted. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be a Nazi about it. If you want to play a game and you haven't got painted toys, then we'll play a game. That's absolutely fine. But I have a strong preference for having everything on the table painted. I like the turn-by-turn making a diorama on the table with my toys.
Fair enough. Favourite era?
To play? Clan Invasion. I like the incredible asymmetry you have between the two different sides in the Clan Invasion era. I think it makes for really interesting tabletop play. Fiction? Fourth Succession War.
Yeah. Good old Stackpole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, favourite faction?
Oh, that's tricky, isn't it? That's an awkward one. Free Worlds League, I guess, in the sense that, well, they're the one that seems closest to what would actually happen, which is a group of people trying desperately to be held together under the vague guise of democracy, and I just find that to be, I find that to be an interesting and compelling setting.
Despite the fact that somewhere back around about the time of the Exodus, Merrick passed this edict which basically said the Captain General's in charge for the duration of the present storm, and have never repealed it.
It Details. It's nominally a democracy.
it's for democracy is your vote counts. I think House Merrick is closer to your count votes.
Yeah, I mean it's the age old thing of one man, one vote. Count Merrick is the man, and he gets the vote.
Yep. All right. Favorite unit in the force sense, not the BattleTech rules sense.
Oh, sorry. I understand the question, because I was about to say the Hunchback, and if you argue against me, I'm going to fight you. But no, you mean
force. Yes.
I do like the Big Mac. I do like the Big Mac, despite the fact that they've got very little actual law written about them, apart from side mentions.
You know how I feel about 12VR at this point, don't you?
I've seen how you feel about it.
Right, and moving on from that, then, favourite mech, right on cue, the Hunchback. Oh, yes,
favourite mech is the Hunchback. There's just something lovely about the Hunchback. It's impractical and ridiculous, and I love the thing, dearly.
And if you thought it was impractical, try the 2C variant.
Yes, exactly.
Let's have two ultra autocannons and enough ammo for 5 shots from each.
Yeah, but that's fine, because you're going to run out of armor before you run out of ammo.
He's not wrong. Okay, favourite novel?
This might be the first time you've got to bleep for me, Mike. I am a basic bitch. I love the On Guard trilogy. I know it's an obvious one, but I
find it hard to argue.
It's what broke my back into the lore.
My one, probably ahead of that, and there is only one, would be Wolves on the Border.
I haven't read it.
I'll lend you my copy, shall I?
Sounds like the way this is going to go, yes?
Yes, and then, as an aside, and I've mentioned them before, the guys from Of Mechs and Men, the podcast, if you want a really nice sort of 3 chapters at a time read-along podcast with lots of fun insights into the lore and some humour that's right up my street, so it's probably right up yours, I can strongly recommend Of Mechs and Men.
Okay. Well, that sounds like one that's going to have to go onto the list. That sounds like perfect accompaniment to painting
or driving.
Oh, I can't do audiobooks and drive.
Right.
It disconnects my brain the number of times I either don't listen to the audiobook or I nearly crash into a lamppost.
I'm the reverse. My problem is if I stick music on, I accelerate according to the tempo of the music.
I have a few speeding tickets caused by that, and I curbed that instinct.
Quite. All right. And one I haven't asked anybody else yet, because you're really one of the few people who's come up with it as a part of your origin story. Favourite of the video games?
Now, as somebody who really likes the lore, I should say it's the HBS BattleTech, because I do think it's probably the best implementation of the lore. But in terms of the one that I've played the most, I have sunk an embarrassing amount of time into MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries. a truly embarrassing amount of time. My perfect game would actually be the management layer from the Harebrained Schemes game, but with the ability to use a joystick and throttle and pedals to pilot the mech around in the missions themselves.
Oh, so you're make going that game. You're going full on HOTAS, are you?
Yes, yeah, it's one of the reasons why I love the MechWarrior games, is if you play them with a HOTAS, the immersion of just, I am actually piloting this Hunchback. Nothing makes you laugh like actually firing off an autocannon 20.
Fair enough. Okay, and the last question, to which I actually know the answer, which is, how big did you go on the Kickstarter?
You see, I didn't go on the Kickstarter, but in fairness, you went big enough for both of us,
I only went battalion. I must admit, the box arrived and I went, there's things there I forgot to buy.
Oh, no. You'll have to buy them like the rest of us, Mike.
Building a Ghost Bear Force, which you've got to have the Kodiak.
Yes.
Which is really a second-line mech, so I wanted a whole bunch of 2C mechs to go with it. And there's 4 or 5 new ones in the Kickstarter. That aren't like there's a Jenna 2C and a Locust 2C and a couple of other things that aren't in the Clan Invasion boxes, and really very much want those. And I was back when I pledged for the Kickstarter, I was still the man who went 30, 25 is great, everything else is bad, and I seem to have learnt my lesson since.
you've joined us in Clan Invasion.
Well, speaking as someone who is in the process of drafting a story for Shrapnel, which involves a 3151 clan bondswoman, I think I've clearly gone a long way the other way.
Okay, this might maybe a bit too far for my tastes, but...
we'll see. Right, okay.
So, might drag me there kicking and screaming.
I'll get you there. So, that was Bob. So, a couple of the regular spots we'll do, before we get on to the reason that we have Bob here. Hobby stuff. I've started doing a thing where we sort of pick through the entrails of a search on Xatu and see what Asmodee actually seem to have in stock at the moment. You're in luck if you're a clanner, you're well out of luck if you're not. They've got all the starter boxes in, they've got the Clan Ad Hoc Star, for more 2C mechs for me, Command Support, Heavy Battle Striker and Fire Stars all in. They have the Innosphere Direct Fire Star Lance, the Irby Lance and the Irby Lamb Lance, and that's it for Innosphere. They've got the Comstar Command Lance, they've got Hansen Rough Riders, and they've got the new Star League Command Lance, which has the very nice pre-painted Orion. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have, in fact, seen that, and it's a very pretty-looking model.
Interesting discovery on that score from chatting to the folks on the UK Discord. It does appear that if you are thinking of trying to strip the paint off that Orion, don't bother, because most of it is self-coloured plastic.
Oh, my good Lord.
Yeah. Mine is somewhere up there out of reach, but it does appear that the Orion is basically self-coloured olive drab plastic. And some of the detailing is painted, and that comes off. But if you don't get anywhere trying to strip the base olive drab colour, because it's part of the plastic, apparently.
Oh, so if you want to paint it yourself, just slap a primer on it and call it a day.
Out with a rattle can and call it a day, absolutely, yeah. Coming soon on pre-order, we have the second Star League Assault Lance, which has Victor Steiner Davian's Daishi, among a few other entertaining things, like an Argus, and what else was it? I've got to go and check now, but there's some rather nice stuff in there, which, as I said, we're not quite sure when that's shipping. It's probably already hit the US, or it's about to hit the US. And Asmodee, being Asmodee, of course, is nowhere near. Although they reckon 31st of December for Xatu, but then I don't trust Xatu's release dates with a sharp, pokey thing. There we go.
I understand Xatu working on a just-in-time delivery model, but they do seem to operate more in a just-not-quite-in-time delivery model.
Yes. So we have Victor Steiner Davian's Daishi, we have an Emperor, we have an Argus, we have a Helios, and we have a J-27 coolant truck. Which is going to be good for something. I'm sure there are some handy special rules for that. The other one that's coming soon, which is probably going to make you drool quite a bit, is available on pre-order. It's a Barnes & Noble exclusive in the States, but it appears to be showing as a pre-order item in the UK. It's the McCarran's Armoured Cavalry Lance.
Ooh. Tasty. Tell me what's in this.
I thought you'd want to know. what's in it? Mechs.
That's a good place to start.
It is a good place to start, yes. We have a Tianzong. Mm-hmm. We have a reposed Black Knight.
Nice.
An awesome 9Q, which I believe is the 4 PPC version.
Is it 4 or 3?
It's many. Many.
It's enough. It's definitely enough.
And a Star Slayer.
A
jumping Star Slayer, moreover. So it's basically nice. Reposed Black Knight, new awesome variant, new Star Slayer variant, and the Tianzong, which is a, I believe, Capellan Confederation beastie.
Yeah, 3090 it's introduced, so it's quite late in the timeline, isn't it?
I might have to, it'll corrupt you further forward down the timeline there, but...
God damn you, Mike.
I'm for my Alina Mercantile League factor in the States is bringing me two over in February. I may spare you one if you're feeling nice to me.
Ooh, exactly how much buttering will you require?
Don't ask. other supplements for the new Ilklan era, Dominions Divided, Tamar Rising, and Ilklan, which is 3 out of 4, are currently in print and available. Empire Alone, which is the other one, is not, annoyingly. Force Manual Curita, no sign yet. Force Manual Davian has been and gone, as in they had stock, they sold it, they have no more stock. Ditto the Battletech Universe book, which is slightly tedious.
I suppose all of these things are things you can get digitally.
You can. They're all available on the Catalyst shop, but I certainly, where things that I might end up designing scenarios from, I do like, while I like having the PDF for the cut and paste and stuff, sometimes I just like holding the book in my hand.
It's one of those, when I'm doing stuff at home and I want to look something up, I much prefer having the PDF because
you can hit splat F and find stuff.
Exactly, and it's actually quite a nice way to do that. Although I have become more at home with the way the rule books are laid out now. There is actually a logic to
them. Some of them actually even have indexes.
God, that's crazy talk.
I know, shouldn't be allowed.
Shouldn't be allowed. It's you should have to flick through 200 pages of rules like real men and women.
Absolutely.
And anybody else who has to read a rule book. But you're right, when you're playing around the tabletop, actually having the physical copy in order to flick through
it's
is just
flicking,
invaluable.
Flicking pages is just so much easier in the real thing, isn't it? Right.
Yeah, exactly. Doing it off an iPad is just, it's not an idea of fun.
And the other nice thing, for those who weren't up on the announcements at PAX, in, wherever that was, Toronto, I think, Hotspots Hinterlands, which is the first follow-up to the Mercenaries box set, which is set in 3151 in the new very mercenary and small unit friendly setting of the Hinterlands. Basically, it's a whole bunch of campaign trees and looks rather cool.
That did look excellent when you were sharing pictures from PAX. That did look absolutely cracking.
Yes. Now, there's also announced a new command lance, which is the Black Remnants command lance pack, which is from those lovely folks at which of the podcasts is it, one of the, I'll find out and stick it in the show notes, one of the podcasts that's doing an actual play Metwarrior Destiny game. Went and smiled very sweetly at Randall and said, can we have a lance for our force? So it does rather appear that they basically, instead of saying these are the lore appropriate ones, they've said these are the ones we think it would be cool for you to make.
I'll look at that.
It's Penny Arcade. It's the guys from Penny Arcade.
Oh yes,
it's Cyclops 11C.
Yep,
A Flashman, a different variant. A Dragonfire, which is a new one, and a Blood Asp.
Nice.
And again, it's one of those that, yes, I'm sure it's lovely if you want to build up that particular lance, but they're just nice mechs.
They are just nice. I have to say, it's one of those, like, having played around with a load of different sort of generations of these plastics over the last couple of years now, the newer ones really are consistently very good.
Yes, they are indeed.
The poses are just a little bit more dynamic. The proportions on them are just a little bit better. It's not so much that you put two next to each other and you go, oh, well, you know, the old ones look crap. But you do notice the new ones do have a... they've definitely learned as they've been sculpting them.
Yes, they absolutely have. They also announced a Starling Striker style.
Jackalope, Kintaro, Hammerhead, and Havoc.
That's the puppy.
And a pre-painted Lament.
Sounds fun to me. And a J-27 Ordnance Transport.
And the J-27. They really want you to have these J-27s,
And the coolant truck is the other one. There's also coming out after that Starling Battlestar, which has a Wendigo and Excalibur, a Peacekeeper, a Malice, a Savage Wolf, which is basically the Timberwolf 4, seems to bounce around quite a lot in the Ilklan novels, and the Savior Repair Vehicle, which I think is a, is new. I don't, that's not in any of the mercenary vehicles, which was quite fun. Yeah. And then they're bringing out an emplacements pack. What's the one thing you spend most of your time shooting at in HBS Battletech?
Oh, good. Now I can shoot at turrets in tabletop.
Yes, exactly. Apparently,
oh, I'm so happy.
Yes, I thought you might be. Apparently, they're going to have the same pop-on turret mount as the LRM and SRM carrier from the Mercenaries box. So you can probably do some horrendously bad and evil things involving LRM God knows how many on a turret.
Oh, good Lord.
Yes. And the only other thing that I think both you and I are going to spend a lot of time with is they showed a mock-up of the first Battletech Aces box.
Ooh.
Right. So for those who possibly picked up Aces when they were sending out proof versions of the rules about a year and a half ago with the Mercenaries Kickstarter, this is what it's turned into. It's written by the same guys who did the Star Wars Heroes of the Azuri cluster game, Fantasy Flight, which is another card engine-driven you-against-the-system game. But they have built a set of cards that allow you to do this for basically a programmed opponent in Alpha Strike. There are, memory serves from the video, there are about 20 scenarios. Basically, you set up the decks accordingly with those goal tracks and turn tracks. And the box comes with a bunch of... Well, there are going to be four boxes, one effectively mapping to each of the Ilklan-era scenario areas. So the first one to come out is the Hinterlands, which comes out with a bunch of... Like the cardboard buildings in Alpha Strike, you've got a bunch of cardboard mazes. So you can build sort of desert blocky areas, and they'll stack and clever things like that. And they're well enough designed that a hill will support the weight of a metal mech, which is quite a nice job. And they come with a complete op four, which, knowing your fondness for clans, you will the op four for the Hinterlands Aces box is Jade Falcon.
Excellent. Oh, fantastic.
Including things like a Thunderbolt 2C and a Bane 3. I will give you 30 seconds to go and look up the Bane 3.
I am curious. Bane 3.
Dear listener, expect whimpering in about 30 seconds. Drum roll.
Also known the Kraken.
Yep, but it's the Bane 3.
Eight LRM 15s.
Yep.
And then the cherry on that, the thing that makes it all the more beautiful, one single shot Streak SRM 4.
Well, of course. Why not? Yes, right.
You are
like
aware,
eight,
aren't you?
Something like 8885 in Alpha Strike.
Well, I mean, I don't know why you think I'm going to be whimpering, Mike. I'm the person who's going to add that to my CJF force, and, yes, and you're the person who's going to be seeing it on the other side of the board, mate.
Yes,
so.
You're probably right there, aren't you? I forget I said anything. Apparently there are going to be four of these Aces boxes. They are probably one of the more compelling reasons to start exploring the Ilklan 3051, 3052 lore. And basically, there's going to be one of these boxes to correspond to each of the Ilklan era source books. So that's Dominions Divided, Empire Alone, Tamar Rising, and Ilklan. This is basically the Tamar Rising scenario set. Each of them will come with an op 4. Each of them will probably come with more fun cardboard scenery and... Basically, they're each independently playable, provided you have a set of Alpha Strike rules and some mechs of your own.
Nice.
I may have been reading quite a few bits of Ilklan lore of late just to get my head around it, because it's turning into quite a nice setting.
In no way motivated by your absolute desire to build something with more C3 in it and El Clan giving you way more options.
Well,
as
yes,
as that...
we'll move on to that in a second. So basically that's what's coming and what you might have a vague hope of buying at Xatu this month. Who knows what that'll be like next episode. Asmodee's stock is as predictable as a not very predictable thing. We should, before we move on to the meat of the show, we should probably cover what we've been up to, which I think mostly amounts to, apart from a number of very close and very entertaining evening Battletech skirmishes, Alpha Strike skirmishes, there was the Club All Day game.
Ah, yes. I have used this, by the way, or pictures of this and the fly-through video to convert three people who have no real interest in tabletop wargaming to tabletop wargaming.
I approve.
And specifically Alpha Strike, on the principle of, oh, I don't really have the money for it. Ah, it's fine, it's fine. The Alpha Strike box is only like 70 quid. Really? Oh, I'm not sure if I have the time for it. Ah, that's fine as well. It only takes a couple of hours to play.
And 5 minutes to teach.
Exactly.
Yes.
Fast forward a week. I bought the box. You're a bastard.
Yeah. Well done, that man.
Mission accomplished. Thank you very much.
So, yeah, we basically had, what, about 1350 points aside?
Yes.
And Dan and Josh from the club versus me and Gary from the Corby store, who's become one of our demo agents recently, and you will find an entry in the directory for unique cards at Corby coming up very shortly. Thoroughly nice chap. And that was basically my poor beleaguered 12th Vegan Rangers defending Lexington and Old Kentucky against Bob's rather large collection of House Leo nasties.
Yes.
And it went historically.
Yes, it went historically accurately, and was absolute chaos, in the best possible way.
Yes, I think the lessons there have been lessons learned, I suspect, it was mayhem, it was chaos, it was also one of the probably most scenery dense tables I think I've ever seen. I'll stick some photos on as part of the show notes, but we had 8x6 table. Very large city in the middle, courtesy of some very nice 3D printed buildings, which I will be reviewing next episode, along with a few other things, from the jolly nice people at Corvus. Is it Corvus? I think it was Corvus.
I think it
yes,
was Corvus.
Corvus.
Yes.
They basically do a whole bunch of 6mm scale 3D printed stuff, everything, a whole bunch of city buildings, so we have a huge city. They did an airbase.
I think we should also probably at this point shout out for anybody who's wondering how you produce this much terrain this quickly. Acrylic marker pens.
Oh dear lord, yes.
Buy a set for 30 quid and you can thank us both later.
Yes.
They're fantastic.
A set plus one, remember? Because you also picked up the metallic blue ones, which are just the mutts nuts of the anti-windows.
Yes, those were, it has to be said, an absolute game changer. Although, in fairness, the other thing that you need in order to paint the windows on, what was it, 30-odd buildings, 30-odd skyscrapers over the course of a week, is an awful lot of Zoom meetings that you don't have to have the camera on for.
That works, yeah. but to be fair, they didn't take this surprisingly little time to print. Basically, shot of grey filler primer, light grey zenithal highlight, and then start picking out the windows with the metallic pen and things like the air conditioning pipes and all the little bits of contrasting colour with the paint markers. And...
yeah. There's none of them which are going to win a diorama competition, but you put them all together on a 3-foot by 3-foot board of other building stuff, and then you surround them with a load of jungle on an 8-foot by 6-foot board, and they are absolutely the dog's dangly bits.
They are. And then we basically rejuvenated most of the club's jungle because it needed
it. We is doing heavy lifting there, in fairness. Mike,
yeah, to be fair, that was me. That was me. You were basically scribbling on buildings.
If I never have to look at another window again, it will never be too soon. But
it wasn't that bad.
Nah, not really, to be honest with you.
You have just reminded me that the 3D printer has finished and I have forgotten to put the next story of the library on it. Which is kind of important, Your Honour. Really. I've got some horrible brown filament to use up.
No, exactly. You can't have a library without stories.
But Tish. Let him in here.
Look, I realise it's not really fair. I make dad jokes. I'm not actually a dad. It is, frankly, a bit of a faux pas.
Yes, it is. It's certainly not a real pas. Right.
Right.
on that note, yes.
Feel free to cut that out, Mike. I'm not sure everybody needs to know what utter lunatics we are.
And we can point at you and humiliate you later.
Fantastic.
Noting one of the things that was, that's the first time we've run anything that big in Alpha Strike. I am going to be curious to see how the pros do it, which is to say Sam and Richard down in Enfield, who are running Operation Dragon Slayer.
Yes, late January.
Which is, for those not familiar with their clan era lore, is Clan Smoke Jaguar and Clan Novacat. Deciding that the best way of getting their own back on Clan Ghostbear for taking over Rattlehead quite so quickly is to go and take over the capital of the Draconis Combine.
And also the Draconis Combine deciding that the best thing that they can do to try and blunt the onslaught of the clans is to throw everything that they have into an absolutely appalling meat grinder and beat them into submission by sheer tenacity.
And somehow convincing the soon-to-be late coordinator that that whole death to mercenaries thing was a bad idea, and please could Wolf's Dragoons and the Kellhounds come along to play?
Yes.
So, as far as I can see from the sign-ups so far, most folks are taking Clan, which means that you, me, Dan, and Josh can quite happily take a whole bunch of Curator and Merc forces.
Fantastic. I do have somewhere... I do have a battalion strength of Beta Company Wolf's Dragoons, which are itching for an outing. So
I have probably a battalion of Sword of Light. Including, per earlier comments, I've been playing around with seeing if it's possible to get a C3 Lance in 3050. C3 Company in 3050, sorry, for stuff that's available for House Curita, and it is.
Yes, I know. I was on the other side of you testing how exactly that might work.
It does include 4 Panthers with C3, 4 Jenners with C3. A Hatamoto Chi, a Cyclops, an Atlas, and a Grand Dragon.
You see, I don't, unfortunately, have very much C3 available as the Wolf's Dragoons.
Yes.
What I just have to put up with is all of the clan variants which I'm allowed to have access to.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yes, I know, it's awful. Whatever will I do? I'll just have to comfort myself with this Highlander 2C.
Remember, it's there for a good time, not for a long time.
In fairness, the 2C is there for a long time as well.
No, it's not. It runs out of ammo in 3 turns.
No. Highlander.
Oh, sorry, Highlander 2C. Not Hunchback. My bad.
Yes. The Hunchback 2C is not there for a long time. The Highlander 2C is there for an extremely long time and irritatingly long.
It's got stupid amounts of armor. Yeah, exactly. So, yes, I'll also include that in the show notes. If you are of a mind to come along, it is the 25th of January, I believe, which is a Saturday. It starts at 9:30 in Ponders End United Reformed Church. So if you can get to the M25, it's not that far. Anywhere within sort of north, south, you should be able to get there from fairly reasonably. There's decent parking. They are lovely, lovely folks. I will get Richard. I've had Sam on the show already from when they were running a Alpha Strike 350 tournament. I will get Richard on the show at some point because I can't get enough of sarcastic people.
You see, I really want to make a sarcastic comment at that point, but I feel like you've boxed me into a corner.
There you go. Right. So, having covered the general sort of administrivia, shall we say, let's move on to the thing that we originally decided we would run an episode on, because we've done enough Alpha Strike, I think, now, that we've started to figure out the things that we do wrong. So, in the best traditions of Nathan's BungleTech podcast, who doesn't cover Alpha Strike, the majority of this podcast from here on in is going to be a little section on Alpha Strike rules that we used to get wrong and probably possibly still do in some cases.
Do you mind if I preface all of this by saying something?
Go ahead.
Alpha Strike, like any tabletop war game, is very abstract. It has to be. If it's not, it's a board game. And there's nothing wrong with a board game.
If it's not, it's classic BattleTech.
Exactly. Which is absolutely fine. But when you go for something which is tabletop and everything's measured in inches, things become more abstract. There's always going to be places where you're not sure of what the rules are, or it doesn't quite make sense, or you have to kind of work out on the fly what makes sense in that kind of scenario. That's how it should be played. That's how these games are fun. Nobody has fun if they spend 4 hours arguing over the wording of a rule. Flip a coin, move on, argue about it over a pint.
Absolutely. And what usually happens at this point is the following game, one of us comes up to you and says, by the way, you know that rule last time.
Yeah, turns out we cocked that up. There's a beautiful example of this in here later, which I will enjoy telling.
There are several, in fact. But beginning, there are also a number of variant rules in Alpha Strike, and we play a few, which the probably the most notable one, which I think a lot of people play, is multiple damage rolls. By which we mean, if your mech does N points of damage, the core rules say, roll 2d6, if you achieve your target number, you do all that damage. If you roll a double six, you get a crit. The multiple damage rolls variant basically says, for each point of damage, roll two dice. Designate one of these dice as your critical dice. If that rolls a double six, you get a crit. Any rolls that hit do a point of damage. There are a few gotchas in this that it took us a while to figure out, I think.
It's also worth noting there's a couple of interactions with specific pilot abilities, which don't actually even work. And there's an entire section in the errata about what you should do for those rules.
Oh, Lord, yes. I had forgotten those. Especially having taken one of them and gone, this makes no sense.
Weapons specialist, this doesn't, what do you mean if I miss by one? I get, but what? That doesn't work, and there's no easy way of translating it.
But to be fair, there is, because they basically say, if you get weapon specialist, you get to reroll one miss.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Which is quite nice.
There's the correct way to interpret it, and it's not complicated, but if you just read the standard rules, it, like, you don't look at it and go, oh, obviously what you do when you're rolling multiple attacks is X.
Yes, it's not intuitive, is it? But the little gotcha that that I hadn't noticed from that is that you auto-miss on a 2.
Yes, double one always misses.
Yes. So if you roll, twos always miss. And in BattleTech, that's not true. In that if your hit number goes down sufficiently low that a two is an auto hit, it's an auto hit. This is not the case in Alpha Strike.
Interesting. But a double six is not an auto, is not an auto hit. You can put yourself so far beyond the range, it's impossible to hit.
Absolutely, yes. And that's again, that's true of both, I think.
Yes.
But the twos is different in Alpha Strike. And then we come on to the other one that we got wrong for a little while, which is attacks and damage where multi-attacks don't apply.
Yes. And in fairness, we still occasionally fluff this when we do physical attacks and forget that it doesn't apply to physical attacks, but we normally retcon it before we get into the next turn.
He says, oh, yes, wait, that should have hurt a lot more.
Or a lot less.
Or a lot less, yes. And the other thing, of course, that variant rule allows you to do is you can split your attacks if you're doing a multiple attack roll.
In fairness, you can do that if it's not multi-attack. So
that's true. You just have to specify how much points are going to...
Exactly, and then you always round down and everything. It works better with multi-attack.
And the second attack is at one harder to hit.
Yes. The thing that I would say about multi-attack, I mean, I think most people play it this way, but the thing that I would say about it is that I think it's really good for two reasons. One is it makes damage rolls much less swingy.
Mm.
Unless, you know, somebody fails to roll above a 4 for an entire turn, for example. Just picking an example out of the clear blue sky here. Yes. Mike, I can't think if you can think of anything.
But yes, let's face it, the converse being not playing multiple attack rolls and having a Bane 3 shoot at you.
Exactly. But I think the other thing that is perhaps sometimes overlooked is that there's a very nice mechanical element to multiple attack rolls. Because, at least in my brain, and I think this translates fairly well for most people, is if I'm firing with an entire Atlas worth of artillery at close range, and I'm rolling 10 dice, at 5 pairs of dice, and I'm overheating for one, so I'm rolling 12 dice, I'm rolling a big-ass handful of dice for a big-ass amount of firepower.
And it feels good.
And it feels correct. It feels like that's how it should work.
Absolutely. Yes, you are particularly fond of multiple attack rolls, or multiple targets.
Yes.
I tend to not bother, but it does seem to be one of your more common.
There's something quite nice about doing... there's a mech there with one point of structure left. Let's pop him with, in my head, the medium laser in the left arm.
Yes.
And then the rest of it can go at this. We do play a house rule, which isn't in the main rules. In the main rules, in theory, you can roll each of these multiple attacks separately, one after the other. So I can fire, I can do one against target one, that doesn't hit, another one against target one, that doesn't hit, a third one against target one, that hits. Right, now all of the rest on target two.
Yeah.
We play it that you have to declare everything to begin with.
Yeah, which I think is fair, I think.
I think it's fair. I think it's more accurate. I think it gives more opportunities for the dice to mess with you.
Oh, surely.
Because there's something... it's very funny if you go, I only need one to kill that. I'll give it 3 damage just
4,
to be sure.
5,
and miss all of
2.
Them.
Yes. Yes, that'd be my dice rolling then.
I mean, not exclusively, but yes, you do have a tendency to roll really badly when you need
it. It seems to be independent of what war game I'm playing as well, but never mind. Multiple attack rolls. Next up, things we discovered when we started playing with things with interesting specials, my collection of interesting things in a Firelance, one of which turned out to have AMS. AMS! Reduces incoming damage from mechs with indirect fire SRMs and LRMs. Interestingly, does not appear to be restricted to once only. It's for any incoming attack.
Oh, is it any incoming attack?
This is why we do these podcasts.
I always thought it was only the first attack.
I can't find anything in the rules that says it is.
Where did we get that idea?
I don't know. Do tell us if we're wrong, dear listener, as I'm sure you will. The other thing to notice is it gets applied after the multi-dice damage roll. So you don't knock one damage off, you don't knock one off, knock a pair of dice off your dice pool. You roll your dice pool and then knock a point off.
Yes. Yeah, that one I did know. I will say, if there is one ability on a mech that before you laminate your cards, you should highlight so that you don't forget about it, it's AMS.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Because there's nothing worse than sitting there and thinking, I'm dead. And about a turn later, you pick the card up to put somewhere else and go, oh, bother.
I should have like 3 points of structure left.
Yes, quite. And conversely, and it appears to have vanished off our document. Oh, it's not. It's further down here. I'll move the section on NARC, which is basically the reverse of AMS in
the
some ways.
The opposite of AMS,
yes. Yes, it is, isn't it? Let's go back to there and paste that in. Alpha Strike. No, Alpha Strike, page 87. NARC is the reverse. Basically, if you tag something with a NARC, which you can do in the same turn as you then fire stuff to target that NARC beacon, you get plus one damage from indirect fire, SRM, or LRM. And the thing we got wrong the first time we played it lasts all game.
I hate NARC.
I love Stalker 5Ms. These results may be not unconnected.
Yes. There is a reason why I now always take at least one mech with ECM. Because ECM nullifies NARC. And even then, it means that you have to spend an awful lot of time dancing around with that light mech.
Cuddling your light mech with ECM, because it's not it kills the NARC beacon, it merely kills the signal from the NARC beacon.
Yes, so the second you drift out of coherence, out of ECM coherence, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. You are getting knocked again. Difficulty is that it is a one-shot to hit roll, and if you roll dice like I do, I don't think in the all-day game I had four mechs with NARC, and I don't think a single one of them hit.
No, it didn't.
No, it's really. I mean, basically, that extra plus one damage when you're sitting there with a nice big beefy fire lance that sort of goes trebuchet, crusader, archer, catapult, You can't knock to save your blooming life. It's a little bit tedious. While we're discussing indirect fire, I'm going to move that one up in the notes as well.
We should have restructured these a little.
We should, but never mind. It's a dynamic Google document that we're both looking at, so it's not like it's hard. Tag. Target acquisition gear. This changed in V7, so if you're doing anything by way of tournament play, do go and read Alpha Strike Commander's Edition page 90, and note that TAG does not just work for artillery anymore. It works for indirect fire.
Yes, this was a fun one to discover, because in my book this turns TAG from being that mech happens to have TAG, to... Ooh. Oh, that's actually really useful.
Yeah. Because
if you can find a TAG and a NARC beacon at the same time, you can pull off some really obnoxious things.
But remember, TAG only lasts for the turn.
Yes. But if you're lucky, if you do this correctly, the thing that you're shooting at will only last a turn anyway.
Right, because you've NARC'd it, you've tagged it. So TAG. Let's step back one. Indirect fire. You are plus one to hit because you're indirect firing. You are plus one to hit if your spotter is also firing.
Yep.
You also apply both your and your spotter's movement modifiers. If your spotter's jumping and you're jumping, you apply both jump mods.
Ooh.
Yes, that's quite...
I didn't know that until
I was writing these notes up.
That's spicy.
Yeah. But if your target's been tagged, then the fact that your spotter is attacking or your spotter has moved is completely irrelevant.
Nice.
And then, of course, the other way around, that one is good old forward observer.
Yes, one of the ones that it took me two or three tries of reading the SPA to work out exactly what was going on there and why it was useful. And most of that was because I didn't fully understand the indirect fire rules and the way that everything stacked off the indirect fire rule.
Because forward observer takes away those penalties as well.
Yes, you still get the penalty for indirect fire. You just get the one for the spotter also attacking.
If the spotter has forward observer.
Exactly.
And if you're... I mean, yeah, sure. If you're... Probably most inner sphere mechs with indirect fire, even if they've got sort of four or medium range, they've probably only got indirect fire two.
Yes.
which by the time you've added the penalties for various things, starts to get a little bit difficult to do 2 points of damage indirectly. By the time you've added an observer with forward observer and Narc, potentially, it's suddenly getting a lot better.
Yeah, all of a sudden you start to look a lot more cozy, particularly if you're shooting at something in medium range. Bonus points if you give your lance that does indirect fire, for example, something which lets you pick a couple of them as sniper at the beginning of the turn.
Which, let's face it, is what a fire lance is for.
Exactly.
You may have noticed that most of my Rangers companies have a fire lance.
Yep.
And probably a Stalker 5M with Nook.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that you've noticed me noticing, given the number of times a Trebuchet 7M rocks up in my lists now.
Yep, same here. I'm quite fond of those. Okay, so that's indirect fire, which we made a right pig zero of over the course of several games till we got our heads around it.
There is one final note in this list, which you have commented with, because it is. But I believe, and you might want to ready that bleep button again, I believe my exact notes on this are, why the f*** are the rules for indirect fire in two different parts of the book?
Yeah, because reasons.
Yes, not good reasons, we'd like to state. Just reasons.
Just reasons, yeah. I'm afraid so.
Yeah. They put it once in the special abilities thing, and then in the special abilities thing, it kind of says, oh yeah, this means you can indirect fire. And you have to go looking in a different part of the book for what that actually means.
Yeah, this is fair. This is not unfair. But hey, we like indirect fire. It's fun. Up to other things that are possibly a little more simpler. Water cooling you off when you overheat. It's
yes.
Only one heat level.
Yes, it is not the same as not firing, which cools off all of your heat levels. It is 1 point of heat for a mech that is in depth one water or deeper.
And if you're in depth two water, you're probably in trouble anyway.
Yes!
But yes, this is sort of by analogy with basically, if memory serves the ruling classic, boils down to you have, if you've got leg-mounted heat sinks and you're standing in the water, then they're doubly effective, I think.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of that which is kind of the trying to abstract a rule from the tabletop. There's another example of this a bit later, which we'll get to when we get on to specialist ammunition.
Your favourite topic.
Oh, I love specialist ammunition. But no, I'm going to keep my powder dry. pun intended.
But first, one of my favourite specials, combat intuition. It took us a while to figure this out, because I won't say the rule is badly written. But if this unit's side wins initiative, the unit has pilot whose pilot has this SPA can move and resolve all of its attacks during the movement phase, applying all damage effects immediately before any target units can act. That any targets units phrase is a bit woolly.
In fairness, the problem I think that they have with writing this rule is that more than any other, this SPA just breaks the game. It's a cheat. I'm not saying it's wrong. I love it as an idea, and it works really well. But in a game which is all about maneuvering and firing, the ability to break that sequence of events is super powerful.
Which is one of the many reasons why you can only do it once every three turns.
And even then, only if you win initiative. And it sort of ripples out into lots and lots of other bits and pieces of rules.
Okay, and I'm now going to close my mouth and note that I had not read those six words at the beginning of the rule before. It only applies if you win initiative.
Yes. Which is why it's really useful as part of a command lance, because the commander gives you
optional rerolls on initiative.
Which I can't remember what the SPA is. I tell you what, I'm going to be silent now, and later you can do an imitation of me and dub it over so I sound like I know what I'm talking about. It's the
Tactical SPA. Genius. Tactical Genius.
Much. God, yes. You've been very quick with that dubbing.
I'm quite good, aren't I? Essentially, What it's there for is that I need this mech to die. I need this mech to die now, and I need this mech to die before it kills me.
Yes.
And yes, it is somewhat overpowering when you use it, but you don't get to use it very often. You have to initiative, and if you fail, it's essentially no good at all, except for the fact that any damage, critical damage you might have done to your target still applies.
Yeah. I will say, I've had a lot of luck with combat intuition when I've used it correctly. I've also had mechs with combat intuition that have died before I've used it because I've gone, oh, now isn't quite right, now isn't quite right, now, and it's dead.
Yes.
Wow.
Whoops.
That once every three turns kind of makes you, sometimes it can make you a little bit gun shy with it,
yeah,
because you're waiting for the perfect opportunity, and as we all know, perfect is the enemy of
killing things. Yes. Per conversation with NC Kestrel, Josh, who is basically the Command Edition author, and some chats on Discord, basically trawling around various people, essentially the way I understand it's meant to work is that you fire at the movement phase whenever you would normally go.
Mm-hmm.
Any target units in the rule actually refers to the units you are firing at that point.
Yep.
So basically, you can go, see that Timberwolf over there that's currently got three crits left, and I really don't want it to fire at me again because Timberwolves still have stupid amounts of damage at short range. Here, cop my full fire load before you have time to reply.
Exactly.
And the other thing to note is, the question does quite often arise, what TMM does this thing get then?
So, I went looking for this because I looked at your notes and I went, you are absolutely right. So I went hunting for it. And in page 42, where it talks about TMM...
Nowhere near the rules for combat intuition, Mark.
That's what I mean with it has ripple effects into other things. It says, in unusual circumstances, attacks can occur during the movement phase. Combat intuition. If an attack against a jump capable target is made before the target has moved this turn, assume the target used ground movement when resolving it, regardless of how the target moved in the previous turn. Now, it's not great. You kind of have to infer from that the same also applies if, for example, the target stood still last turn.
Hmm.
Although it doesn't say that.
What if it's shut down and flat on its back?
Well, then it's immobile.
Yeah, true.
So, this is it. We're back to my earlier thing of sometimes you've got to just to agree what makes sense. I don't think there's anything which says this for immobile.
No,
I don't think
I think
there's anything.
Jump is the obvious weirdness here, isn't it?
Jump is the obvious weirdness. And I guess you could maybe make the argument that standstill should carry over from the previous turn in the same way that immobile does.
Yep.
You could probably argue that, but I saw somebody who described it, I think, in a way which makes sense in my brain anyway, as until you have taken an action to modify the TMM on the unit's card, the unit has the TMM that's written on the card.
Sound.
Which kind of, okay, that kind of makes sense.
Yep, that does. We do, I think it's rare that both of us don't have command intuition, because both of us end up with a command lance.
Largely
because both of us are quite fond of having initiative.
Yes, I mean, and this is the thing with the SBAs in general. It kind of says you've got to agree with or not you want to use these, and one of the reasons is not all of them are created equal.
No, and there are some revised versions of the SBAs coming up. There is a beta test set up on the forums, which I will post a link to, including the Alpha Strike tweaks, which are well worth a look, I suspect, because they've tried to balance them out. The other thing, I mean, and segueing on beautifully, because the thing that combat intuition requires you to have is initiative. Intuition. I've got intuition on the brain. Initiative with uneven forces.
Yes.
Now, we've had a bit of a play with this, and I think we've settled that...
Well, shall we start with the two ways of doing this? One is backloaded initiative, where you go alternating until one of you has double the amount of
yeah,
opposing.
But let's just be a little bit careful there, in that you look between pairs.
Yes.
So it's I move one, you move one, we look again. I move one, you move one, we look again.
And if at that point,
yeah.
Yeah, at the point where I've got twice as many as you, I move twice as many mechs as you, until that's no longer the case, and then we go back to alternating again.
And what actually happens there, we're in absence of combat intuition, where mechs can die in the movement phase, is this results in you'll sit there doing alternate, until eventually I have twice as many as you, and then it's just 2-1, 2-1, 2-1 to the end.
Yes. But what this can mean is that if you win initiative, you're in a position where you move two mechs last rather than one mech last, and the advantage of moving the last mech is already substantial.
Yes.
And this turns it into a kingmaker. If I've got more mechs than you and I win initiative, I double my... Not only do I double the amount of firepower I have on the board, I double the amount of mechs that I move last. And it can turn into a kingmaker mechanic.
Yes, it can. It gets... It makes it... if you're... what's the word my foot? It's one of those where you get a runaway. Once you start to get a runaway, it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. So the alternative, which I think we've decided we'd like better, is, again, you pair moves up, so it's me, you, me, you, me, you. Between each pair, if I have more mechs than you, more units than you, I move two.
Yeah. And in practice, what that actually turns out as is, at the beginning, we work out who's got the most mechs, and we go, okay, I've got 14 mechs, you've got 12 mechs, so I'll move two, you move one.
You've got 12, I've got 11.
I move two, you move one.
I've got 10, you've got 10.
And now we go alternating.
Yeah.
And it both smooths out that advantage that you get for winning initiative with more mechs, and on top of that, means that you only do the admin once. Because you have to do that piece of admin at the beginning of the turn anyway, which one of us has the most mechs. But instead of going, oh, I've got more, at some point in the next 20 minutes...
I'm going to have to remember that I've got twice as many as you.
Yeah, and we're going to have to keep on stopping and counting and working out where that tipping point is.
Yep.
Or we just get rid of that admin at the beginning.
Yeah, and then we just move use on. Use that, get that problem out of the way, deal with it. And carry on. And it still means that if you win initiative, you get to go last.
Exactly.
And there's a degree to which also, if you're one of these people who wins initiative an awful lot, not mentioning any names, but you don't get that runaway effect.
Yeah, exactly.
It means winning initiative is not quite as good as it might be. But
still,
I mean,
pretty punchy.
Yeah, and there are probably other alternatives, but I'm quite happy with that as a current house rule, is that we're playing front-loaded initiative.
Yeah. Yeah. Not really a thing that we've made a mistake. Well, I suppose technically we've made the mistake on the back-loaded initiative enough where we get to the end and go, oh shit, I guess I'm moving four mechs now.
Yes, which is quite easy to do. Okay, so moving on to your favourite topic.
Oh, special ammunition. I love special ammunition. Again, like SPAs. Like SPAs, they're not all created equal. There are some which are just demonstrably better than others, but they are good fun. The first one, which took us a couple of tries to wrap our head around, was that special ammo isn't an addition to your normal damage. It's a supplement to your damage. So if I've got a mech that does 3 damage at medium range and they've got SRM 110, I take one of my medium range damage. So I do 2 normal damage and then 1 SRM damage.
Where do the crits go?
The crits go with the regular ammo.
Right. Unless, of course, you have long range, medium range 2 and SRM 2-2.
In which case, the crits go with the specialist ammo.
Because you have no choice.
Because you don't have a choice in the matter. Yep. And then the specialist ammo modifies what happens with that 1 point or 2 points of SRM damage. If it's Infernos, it converts all of it to heat. And you don't actually do any damage. If it's Deadfire SRMs, it takes that 2 damage at medium range and makes it 0. But in return, you get 3 damage at short range. So,
yeah. same for assorted random custom autocannon damage, etc.
Yes, exactly. What I will say for, and this is not a rule that we've made a mistake of, but if you want a combination which can be hilariously funny if you pull it off, try a spotter with Inferno SRMs and an LRM boat with heat seekers.
Oh, that's not nice. Oh, that's massively not nice.
But it is funny.
Oh, yes.
It is funny. Like, you laughed very, very hard when I did it to you the first time, and I was doing it to you.
Almost as hard as you laughed when I hit you with Slugger.
We don't talk about the impromptu tree planting ceremony that you held in the back of that awesome.
No, we don't. The other thing that is very unclear in the rules, or at least we found it very unclear, is special ammos. What do you get and when and where?
Yes. Oh, so we went back and forth on this. So at first I thought that you only get one special ammo and you have to declare it at the beginning of the game before
it starts.
Which,
let's face it, is what you get in Classic, which is basically you have to declare that this ammo bin is full of Inferno.
Exactly. But then a slightly more careful reading of the rules says that it's you only get one special ammo per attack. So you can't mix Infernos and Heatseekers, for example, in the same. Not that you could, because one of those is LRM and the other one's SRM. But you can't. I think a good example of how you would be able to do that anyway, but you're not allowed to. If you can come up with some clever way of firing two different ammo types at the same
Dead
time.
Deadfire and heat.
Oh, that could work.
Don't go there.
But the point remains, you're not allowed to stop it.
Players should agree to the use of specialty munitions and record which of their units are using which types, which means you do actually have to say at the beginning of the game what's carrying what.
But you're not limited to only using one type.
No.
And that's where I got the confusion from in this. Now, actually, this is another one of those ones that we've house ruled, because it does seem to make more sense that a better way of abstracting you're only allowed one ammunition type per ammunition bin from Game of Armored Combat is that you have to declare at the beginning which your one alternate ammo is going to be. And that does mean that things like an Archer, which has 4 LRM bins, are slightly more limited than they would otherwise have been. But it does mean that you can't have a Hunchback, which nominally only has 2 ammo bins of AC-20 ammo, running around with 14 different types of autocannon ammunition and apparently one shell of each.
Or, yes, this is true. We should note, I think, backtracking to Slugger, that there is an implicit rule in the Game of Armored Combat version of Slugger that your mech actually has to have hands. Now, there is no way, this is not recorded on your on a mech's Alpha Strike sheet,
but
I think we've generally house ruled that if your miniature does not have hands, you don't get to use Slugger.
Yes. They don't have teeth. You can't carry a tree in them.
No, nor can you stuff a tree up the spout of your non-functioning PPC. Marauder pilots. Warhammer pilots. Timberwolf pilots.
That's not fair. Timberwolves traditionally have ER large lasers anyway.
Yeah, true. Special ammo. It's a bit... I tend not to bother because I can never be bothered with the bookkeeper deciding which ones to do. Bob is rather fond of it, and I'm getting fed up again hit with Infernos.
In fairness, I might be waning on my love of it, because realistically, you want precision for the autocannons to stop the runny little bastards. And you want dead fires for your LRVMs so that at medium range you can chuck out an extra point of damage from them. Yeah. And beyond that, I mean, Infernos are fun if you can get them off.
Yep. They're not fun if you're on the receiving end of them.
No. But in fairness, most of the time, if I want to do heat damage, I'll just run elementals with flamers.
Don't. Right. Moving on to the little collection of fun things right at the end. Sprinting does not give you extra TMM.
It totally should, and we should consider a house rule that lets it.
Now, who was I talking to? I was talking to one of the guys who regularly streams Battletech on YouTube, and it's not Death from Above because they have their own random collection of interesting rules. Does actually house rule that sprinting is plus one TMM?
Yeah. I mean, you can go even further with that, because you can work out, like, for example, an Atlas sprinting is 9 inches. 9 inches would not normally give you 2 TMM.
Quite.
So you can kind of work out when it should give you plus one TMM. But I think realistically, you can just say it's plus one TMM if you sprint.
It's an abstraction again. Yeah. I'm half sold on that. I said there's one of the guys on YouTube is doing that, and that seems to be quite sensible. Next one, we've covered this. Why the heck are the rules for indirect fire in two different parts of the book? Because they are. Move on.
Yeah, I mean, you say that like I should just get over it, but it's going to irritate me every time I have to look up the rules for indirect fire. And the one benefit of now having got a better handle on the rules of indirect fire is that I no longer have to go to two different places in the rule book to look them up. So.
Fair. Melee. This one I remember you discovering the hard way. Melee gives you an extra 1-inch range on physical attacks, as well as the plus one damage.
Yep, didn't see that coming.
Smack.
Did not know what hit me. Literally.
No. Wasn't that the Wolverine with Slugger again?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
I thought we agreed we weren't going to talk about this.
Okay, fair. And then on the subject of other unpleasant close-range melee attacks, anti-mech.
Oh, we can talk about that all you like.
I can't imagine why.
Yes, anti-mech. The ability to automatically crit if you do manage to do any damage in melee, particularly with elementals, this is one of those rules that I love because it's so thematically correct.
Strange you should say that. I was reading Arrow the Wolf, which is basically Blaine Pardo on... I think it's Blaine Pardo on the end of the Republic of the Sphere on Terra, when Clan Wolf and Clan Jade Falcon go and basically beat the snot out of them. And you get elementals doing the elemental thing, namely jumping up on the mech and starting to punch through the cockpit.
Yeah.
And this is a thoroughly lore-based rule. And it's what makes elementals dangerous and why you should not drop your elementals off 5 inches away from your target. Bob.
Look, I made that mistake once. I haven't made it since.
Fair.
Mistake that we've made, however, with this is forgetting that anti-mech is a physical attack. And therefore you roll only one dice. It does not apply, the multi-attack rule does not apply to it.
Which is really only interesting because elementals tend to do two.
Yes.
So you're rolling one pair of dice for two points of damage. If you roll a double six, you get a crit, and you get a crit anyway.
Yes. It is theoretically possible, if you really want to, if you're able to make it happen, to get three crits with 2 points of damage with a pair of elemental. And that's just beautiful.
Yeah, it has to be the right target.
It has to be the right target. It has to have had all of its armor stripped off it already. But if you can make it happen, it
double
is.
Six does. Through a through armor crit, and I'm already through an automatic crit, a crit because I rolled a double six, and a crit because I'm through your armor.
Exactly.
Have a nice day.
Or have an extremely rubbish day, more likely by that point. But...
yes, because if you've got one elemental, you've probably got more than one.
Yes, yes, like cockroaches, they run in packs.
Yes, that the Battletech equivalent of the can of raid doesn't really exist. And finally, Esther!
Ah, yes, yes. One of those ones that we read and went, oh, we've done that wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So many times. You can jump into water. You cannot jump out of water. Ah.
Whoops.
I can think of a number of times I've used jumping in and out of water to try and negate the movement penalty of moving through water. And it turns out that's a no.
No, indeed. And fortunately, this isn't classic where jumping into depth on water, I think, is a piloting skill role as well.
We could probably also add into this that moment where we used depth 2 water for the first time and after a brief consultation with the rule book, realised how much movement it would take to cross said river.
Yep.
8-inch mechs cannot make it across a 2-inch river if it is depth 2.
Nope, absolutely not. Well, we're bear in mind at this point, of course, that Alpha Strike depths are actually inches, not hexes. So it's 1-inch deep. 1 scale-inch deep. Whatever that is. I lose track of what ground scale is in Alpha Strike. But yeah, so yeah, that's one that we've... I think that's another of those come to the table the following week and go, you know what?
We've just... yeah.
But as Bob said at the very beginning, it really boils down to, as long as you're having fun, it really doesn't matter that much. If you find out later that you got something wrong, then... either shrug and accept it for the rest of the session, or accept it at a point where it's not unbalancing to everybody else, or say, no for next time.
Exactly. As with anything like this, I've got to say, the key really has to be, find the person that you play against who's going to have the same approach to rules interpretation that you have.
To be fair, is fortunately most of our club.
Yes, we are actually quite fortunate with that one. And from what I can see, that tends to be the approach in most of the Battletech and Alpha Strike community.
Oh, yeah. Although, to be fair, I don't play tournament Alpha Strike. And I don't know what the tournament scene is like on that point of view. But then I don't think we have anywhere near as big an Alpha Strike tournament scene as we do in the US, where it's absolutely mental.
So this is one of those you can only go by... what you know, what you see, which is always through a filter and your own lens, but
yeah.
You see, I've poked around on the Alpha Strike tournament Reddit and forums. There's an awful lot less rules interpretation discussions, which I suspect might just be that the rules are actually quite cleanly written.
Speaking as people who've just got a 40-minute chat out of the fact they aren't. Or possibly about the fact that we're not very good at reading them.
I would say it's more that one than the other, to be honest with you.
The other thing probably to be aware of is that the authors are readily accessible. If that you have a problem, help. NC Kestrel is active on the forums. He's active on the Catalyst Discord. And there are a lot of people who also understand the rules, who are quite willing to, if you come at the rules question, they are quite willing to say, no, you're wrong, and this is why.
Yes. I suppose that's what I mean by clearly written. It's not that they're not open to misinterpretation. It's that a careful reading of the rules can usually only be read in one way. It might be easy to misread the rules.
Yes.
But... the interpretation when they're fully read is probably not.
The other thing we should add to that is that NC Kestrel is very active with errata.
Yes,
and they
that
are
is a good point.
Possibly among the more nicely produced errata. You know, I don't know if anybody's ever. If you happen to own, for example, Commander's Edition 5th or 6th edition, and you grab the errata, they come in two ways. There is a complete cumulative set of errata from the beginning of the publication of Alpha Strike Commander's Edition. And as an appendix, there are two appendices. One is the changes from the previous edition to this one. And the other is a complete reprinted set of tables that you can print out for your own convenience.
The reprinted tables in particular are a really, really,
really nice idea. That's why they're in, you know, the black file that I bring around with my Commander's Edition has the current errata in it and the tables.
Yes, which is a fantastic addition. I will say, and I can't remember exactly what the rule, what which one it was, where we ended up having a bit of a discussion about it in the UK Battletech Discord before we realised that there is a rule in there which was changed. We nailed it down to it being changed in 5th edition.
Yep.
That hasn't been errated. And I can't remember what the rule was, but I remember us after a bit of back and forth going, hang on a second.
Which edition are you working from? I have a physical 6th edition. As far as I can tell, it is currently impossible to get a hold of a physical 7th edition because most of them inadvertently went to Kickstarter fulfillment by accident. But you can, it is, I would say that spending the not very much money on a copy of a PDF, a legit PDF copy of Alpha Strike Commander's Edition from the Catalyst store is well worth it. If you have bought at any point one of the boxes, you've probably got a voucher that will pay for it.
Well, that's a nice touch. I've got to say, I do like the approach to rules Catalyst have taken. Again, as somebody who, as I said at the beginning, originally came into tabletop wargaming through the tried and tested method of being ripped off by Games Workshop and then discovering better alternatives, I'm not actually slagging them off that badly. I've still got a variety of 40k armies.
If this was a Games Workshop rulebook, you'd have paid for 3 new rulebooks by now.
Well, and that's exactly the thing. There is a reason why I stopped playing in a concerted effort. And it was the point where I'd ended up buying like 3 editions of the rules. I've got no time for this anymore. I'm now of an age where I've actually got other things that I want to be doing other than rebuilding this army every third week.
And as I've said on numerous occasions, the other issue with Games Workshop is if you actually read their company statement, they're not a rules making company. They're a figure making company. The rules are just there to sell more figures.
Well, which I will absolutely accept at the point where they stop selling me the rules for 30 quid a pop.
Well, fair. Commander's edition in hardback is about the same money, but you only have to buy it once.
I do only have to buy it once, and Catalyst aren't trying to tell me that they're not a rules-making company.
This is true. And on that note, I think we should wrap this up here. Otherwise, my listeners are going to be complaining that I've run over. I think they're going to be complaining I've run over anyway, because we're on an hour and 25. So...
Fine, you can hack this about a little bit. There's an awful lot of waffling in the middle, which I did, that you can probably lop out.
There's always an awful lot of waffling on my podcast. That's what I do.
This is so, unfortunately what happens when you get two friends with ADHD in a podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Not stay on topic for love nor money.
No, quite, but none of the rest of my guests have been that good at it either. So. Right, in which case, it only remains for me to thank Bob for being a superb guest. We should probably do this again, mate.
Yeah, no, I would enjoy it.
It seems to work.
Yes, I've had a thoroughly lovely time. Thank you for inviting me on.
You're welcome. And there will be another end-of-year review episode after this one, because I've realised that I have about 6 things I want to review in terms of products and books and such like that I am not going to fit into this episode. And sometime after that, I have another guest who will be another author. But I'll leave it at that for now. So it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
And it only remains to say, roll good dice. Tales from the Periphery is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 international license. In short, give us some credit, don't make money out of it, and if you make an adaptation of it, you must share it under the same license. Have fun!